Translation. Narada Muni replied, "My dear king, those who stay at home as householders must act to earn their livelihood, and instead of trying to enjoy the results of their work themselves, they should offer these results to Krishna." To Krishna Vasudeva. How to satisfy Vasudeva is this in this life can be perfectly understood through the association of great devotees of the Lord. Purport. The format for Grihastha life should be dedication to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In Bhagavad Gita 6.1 it is said, Anasrita kama palam karyam karma karoti yaha sasanyasi cha yogi cha na niran na chakriha. One who is unattached to the fruits of the work and who works as he is obligated is in the renounced order of life, and he is the true mystic, not he who lights no fire and performs no work. Whether one acts as a brahmachari, grihastha, varnaprastha, or sannyasi, he must act only for the satisfaction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva, Krishna, the son of Vasudeva. This should be the principle for everyone's life. Narada Muni has already described the principles of life for a brahmachari, varnaprastha, and sannyasi. And now he has described how a grihastha should live. The basic principle is to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The science of satisfying the Supreme Lord can be learned as described here. Sakshat Upasita Mahamunin. The word Mahamunin refers to great saintly persons or devotees. Saintly persons are generally known as munis, or thoughtful philosophers concerned with transcendental subject matters. And Mahamunin refers to those who have not only fairly studied the goals of life, but who are actually engaged in satisfying the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva. These persons are known as devotees. Unless one associates with devotees, one cannot learn the science of Vasudeva Arpanam, or dedicating one's life to Vasudeva, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In India, the principles of this science were followed strictly. Even 50 years ago, I saw that in the villages of Bengal and the suburbs of Calcutta, people engaged in hearing Srimad Bhagavatam daily when all their activities ended. Or at least in the evening before going to bed, everyone should hear the Bhagavad Gita. The Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam classes are held in every village, and thus people have the advantage of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, which describes everything about the aim of life, liberation or salvation. This will be clearly explained in the next verses.
Vaidyatmanandasya jananjana salakaya chaksuram militam yena tasmai sri gurave namaha. Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Gadamayam Dadati Svabhadantikam Vancha Kalpatuyubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vayevacha Patitananam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha.
Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadara Srivasati Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare. The activities of the Grihasthas are now being mentioned in this chapter, as previously the activities of a brahmachari and sannyas have also been mentioned. And from my own personal experience of being a devotee for the last 40 years, it seems that the activities within Krishna consciousness has always been difficult to understand. To what degree we're supposed to do, to what degree we're supposed to act, where should we work or not work, should we renounce or not renounce, should we be attached or unattached. So to get that balance is actually quite difficult. The activities themselves are quite straightforward. We get up and we attend Mangal Arati, we chant our japa, we offer Guru Puja and respects to the deities and worship the deities, and we take prasad. There's so many activities that we do that in themselves they don't seem to be that difficult, especially taking prasad. We all learned that one from day one of coming to a temple. But to what degree to get that balance, whether we should work, whether we shouldn't work, whether we should renounce or shouldn't renounce, whether we should be active or not active, whether we should be attached or not attached. It is very, very, very difficult, and even to this day we see examples of great renounced devotees falling away from Krishna consciousness just simply because they just didn't get that balance right. So, of course, Krishna has given the formula in the Bhagavad Gita. It's mentioned here that we should do whatever needs to be done, but offer the result to him. Prabhupada gives the example of the body, that different functions of the body, they work for the whole body. They don't act separately from the purpose of the person within the body. It's just like if, you know, suddenly the hand suddenly says to me, well, today I'm not going to put the food in the mouth. I've been putting this prasadam you've been taking in your mouth every day for the last 40 years. But today I want to enjoy it myself. You could understand from that how what a predicament that would be for me as the person who wants to put it in the mouth to get some energy throughout the day. So we can only imagine what Krishna is feeling when we act independently from his will and his desire. Or suddenly my hand just started to push me off the seat and go into another room. And it would just, it wouldn't look right, it wouldn't feel right, and it's just not right. My intention is here to sit and give a Srimad Bhagavatam class, but suddenly my hand says, no, we're not going to do that, we're going to go into the next room and do something else. So from where Krishna's standing, we can understand that he's looking down on us and seeing not so much the duties that we're performing, but the mentality that we're performing them in. The duties themselves or the offerings themselves to Krishna, he's not at all attached to that. And most likely he's getting better service offered to him anyway up in the spiritual world. So our little bit of offering, whatever it is we offer, of course we try to offer as good as possible from the external point of view. Our deity worship is very high standard for today's worship. And all the other activities that we do, we try to do it with cleanliness and with punctuality, and etc., etc. But also Krishna is looking at the mood of service. What is our actual mentality? Do we have any other agendas other than actually pleasing him? So that is specifically what Krishna is noticing. To what degree? And of course, as is explained in the Srimad Bhagavatam in the second canto, that to the degree that your service is divided a little bit for me and a little bit for Krishna, so to that degree we will be Krishna conscious or not. So as far as activity, Prabhupada explained that the soul cannot be inactive, so it has to be active. Of course, we have the Mayavadis who try to artificially renounce and attain liberation by becoming one with the Supreme. So externally, they become very, very renounced. But internally, they have a high selfish motivation to become one with the Supreme. And also Prabhupada mentions that sometimes the point of being too renounced is not very good either, because our heart becomes too hard. So the tendency with the Mayavadi sannyasis is that they reject everything around them. They see it as Maya. And they live a very, very dry, renounced life. But it is dry. It may be renounced, but it's dry. And that dry renunciation makes their heart very, very hard. And Prabhupada pointed out that as devotees that we should... Yes, we to some degree we renounce. We renounce in the sense that we renounce in the sense of what's favorable for renouncing, to what degree is favorable for our service. But to completely renounce, he rejected that, saying that that will develop a hard heart. And to go... And to go to Vrindavan, to go back home, back to Godhead, where we will serve Krishna personally, we'll have to develop a very soft heart. Krishna is looking for for the softness of the heart of his devotees. So therefore, that is a fine balance. And the mystic yogis, they also renounce activities, and they're sitting with half-opened eyes, wanting to be inactive, but at the same time, they also have a desire, a selfish desire, and their selfish desire is to acquire mystic perfections. Bhaktisiddhanta, he gave an example once of a mystic yogi who had acquired the perfection of being able to stretch his arm across the river. He was able to elongate his arm quite some distance, but the purpose of doing it was to light up his chillum. So he had some mystic power, but he used that mystic power for the wrong purpose. And Bhaktisiddhanta gave the example that if you have yogurt and you churn yogurt, that can turn into butter. It is yogurt, isn't it? It's churned. Yeah, yogurt churned turns into butter. But if you churn whitewash, this whitewash is like the, before you put your coating of paint, you put a coating of whitewash on the wall. So you open up the tin of whitewash and you churn the whitewash, and it doesn't do anything. He gave that example. So mystic perfection, very good that you've achieved this perfection, but unless you offer the results of that perfection to Krishna, then it has no use, no value. When Prabhupada first came to India, to England, they asked him that, what are you going to do? What have you come here for? And Prabhupada, he said, I've come first to teach you what you have forgotten, love of God. And what have I come here for? No, I have not come to walk on water. I've come to take your boys and girls from the back streets of Birmingham, London, Manchester, and make them into Vaishnavas. Turn them into Vaishnavas. So he said that is the most mystical feat. Walking on water nowadays is not such a... there's so many boats that are traveling on water, and you can dance on water, sleep on water, eat on water. So what's... it was almost like the reporter was throwing water in his face, and he picked that water up and he threw it right back. So what is the problem nowadays to do things on water? It's not a problem. So many big boats are there where you can go and do things on water. No, the most mystical feat is turning Vaishna into Vaishnava. So that's mystic perfection. Devotees, they acquire sometimes this mystic perfection, especially our book distributors. I am no longer a book distributor, but I remember being a book distributor, and I remember doing things which ordinarily it was not possible that I could do without the mercy of Sri Sri Gaur Nittai. And we see that sometimes we go out, and if we have the right consciousness and we're actually performing the activity or service without attachment, but trying to pray to Sri Sri Gaur Nittai for their special mercy, then we start doing things that inconceivable. We're, of course, Krishna's, he is inconceivable himself, and we link up with him, then we can also do inconceivable activities. Suddenly, whereas the day before it was very difficult and you had to put a lot of effort and energy into, then the next day it becomes effortless. You're just standing there and just passing out the books as if someone else was doing it for you, and you can't understand what's going on here. So the mystic perfection is Krishna's Yogeshwar, so why not? He can also give these little perfections to his devotees if he knows that they're going to use them in the proper way. Work or not work? Well, Krishna himself says, if I did not work, then all the world would turn to ruin. So in that sense, if Krishna's working, then why shouldn't we work? But work should be done for the satisfaction of Vishnu. Otherwise, work causes bondage in this world. So nothing wrong with work. But again, that work should be used for Krishna's pleasure. I think I got a verse here. Because sometimes devotees, especially grihasthas, they get a little bit confused about this, whether it's a work or not work. Because we get confused because we think that the goal of life is knowledge and renunciation and detachment, and so therefore I know I have a duty here, but why should I do it, you know? Especially devotees that work alongside with non-devotees, we question, well, why should we do this? This is contaminating, or it's not good for my Krishna consciousness. The Prabhupada, he says some interesting things here in the 18th chapter. Anyone who gives up prescribed duties as troublesome or out of fear of bodily discomfort is said to have renounced the mode of passion. Such actions never lead to the elevation of renunciation. One who is in Krishna consciousness should not give up earning money or out of fear that he is performing fruitive activities. If by working one engages his money in Krishna consciousness, or if by rising early in the morning one can advance his transcendental Krishna consciousness, one should not desist out of fear or because of such activities are considered troublesome. Such renunciation is in the mode of passion. There's another. This is also very. The next verse. When a person performs his prescribed duties only because it ought to be done, and renounces all material association, all attachment to the fruits, his renunciation is said to be in the mode of goodness. And in Prabhupada's purport, he describes, prescribed duties must be performed with this mentality. One should act without attachment for the results. He should be disassociated from the modes of work. A man working in Krishna consciousness in a factory does not associate himself with the work of the factory, nor with the workers of the factory. He simply works for Krishna, and when he gives up the results for Krishna, he is acting transcendentally. So renunciation, or not to renounce, this is also This is also explained in one of these verses, but I couldn't find it. But basically, Prabhupada is explaining about sannyasis that sannyasis should not give up, renounce their sacrificial duties. And he specifically mentions about how sannyasis should encourage their disciples or young devotees in the process of getting married, and they themselves should attend the ceremony and give their blessings. So from an external point of view, sannyas means he's not, what do you say, inactive. He has to develop that mood of being inactive within the world. So on that side he's inactive, but then it's suggesting that he should be active. So this is sometimes a little complicated for even sannyasis. So they may sometimes come in and give a quick talk and then run out again. But I was just recently, a couple of days ago, watching Prabhupada attending one wedding, Bali Mardan, and it was all filmed, and there was Prabhupada just sitting there. It was like he was there, but he wasn't there. But he made sure he was there. You know? And in all these ashrams, it's like that. You're there doing the duty, but you're not there because your main focus is Krishna. It's like on the street, you're giving a book to someone, and then that person starts to explain their whole life story. So you don't go walking away, you stay. You're there, but you're not there. You're not really listening because your main interest, the main interest for you is for them to take a book or give a donation. But sometimes we have to sacrifice. Okay, what is it you have to say? So then they say. Sometimes they may go on for 10 minutes, 15 minutes. So you're there, but you're not there. You're there to the point where they can reciprocate with you. Yes, oh, he's listening to me. It's a very subtle thing. And Grihastha life is the same. You're performing your duties. You're there. You're working. You're performing your devotee duties. But at the same time, you're thinking of Krishna, how to please Krishna. So the sannyas is the same. Renunciation is there, but at the same time there are duties that must be performed for the benefit of the whole society. This is the point. Again, the benefit of the whole, not that we have self-interest. Well, I am this kind of person, I am that kind of person, therefore I will renounce this duty or this sacrifice. Attachment or non-attachment, well, that's a good subject matter and a very difficult one. It's difficult for the non-devotees and it's equally as difficult for the devotees. But let me tell one story in regards to a non-devotee. He was a very fruitive worker. His name was Kailash. And Kailash was a very successful businessman, merchant, living out in the village. He had acres and acres of land, and he was growing and selling his crops, but very successful, lucrative business. And one day Narada Muni came along and he invited Kailash. Why don't you come with me? You've worked now so many years and I'm actually just going off to Vaikuntha, and you can come with me if you like. So Kailash said, no, I have my sons, they're dependent on me. I have so many more ideas in my work. So not this time, but maybe next time I will consider. So Narada Muni went off, but he did return sometime later. It was many years later, and by that time his sons have grown up. And he asked Kailash again, "So now that your sons are grown up, why don't you now renounce and come with me? I'm off to Vaikuntha. You can come with me." And again he rejected, saying, "Well, you know, now my sons, they have grandsons and they're also dependent on me. So, you know, I also have a few other things that I need to finish off. But for sure, the next time you come, I will follow you." So then Narada Muni, he did return. And he was looking around for Kailash, but Kailash was nowhere to be seen. And he was informed by his sons that Kailash had left this world. So Narada Muni was thinking, "Oh, I wonder where Kailash is now." And as he was leaving, suddenly a dog followed him. The dog within the house followed him and started to bark. And he was speaking to Narada Muni, "Narada Muni, this is Kailash." And Narada Muni looked down and said, "Kailash? Oh no, now you are a dog? This is terrible. How did you get into that situation?" And Kailash explained that, "Yes, you know, there are things that still need to be done here." And Narada Muni said, no, come on now. It's not too late now. I can take you. Come with me now." And Kailash said, no. "You see, my sons, you know, they're getting money every day, but they're not putting it in the bank, so I have to guard the house. I have to guard the house so that the money is not stolen. But, you know, next time maybe." So then Narada Muni, he did come back some time later. He was even prepared. This is, of course, the mood of a preacher. Preaching, Prabhupada said, is a thankless task. But the preacher never gives up. He will never give up. And Narada Muni, he's one of the foremost preachers. And he for sure doesn't give up. He was prepared to even deliver Kailash the dog. So he came back one day. And he was looking around for the dog, but the dog was nowhere to be seen. So again he asked, just, you know, how do you say, off the cuff inquiry to the Kailash's son, "Oh, by the way, what happened to that dog you had when I was here last time?" "Oh, he passed away a couple of weeks ago." So then Narada Muni was just on his way through the fields, and he was thinking, "This is terrible. Kailash has left his dog body, and I wonder where he is now." And then suddenly, he heard the sound. "Narada Muni, I am Kailash." And then again, Narada Muni looked down, and he saw snake, and he said, "Oh, Kailash? Now you're a snake? What on earth are you doing?" So then he explained, "Well, you know, my sons, they started to put the money in the bank, but they don't get up until 12 o'clock midday, and I'm here every morning guarding the fields. There are elephants in the local area. There are also neighbors that are envious, and they're trying to steal the crops. So I'm protecting the field." And Narada Muni tried again. This was his last. No. He had that much, that, okay, this is the last time I'm going to ask you. Now, it's still not too late. Please come with me. I am going off to Vaikuntha. You can give up this snake body right now and come with me. But again, Kailash rejected the offer. I cannot. You know, I'm so attached to the things around here. I must see that it's all going to work perfectly fine for my family members. So Narada Muni just couldn't take any more, so he had a good plan. He started to clap his hands very loud and started to shout. And the sons came out of the house. What's wrong, Narada? You have a snake in your field. So the sons then, they came with sticks and they started to beat the snake. And Kailash the snake was going, "I am Kailash, your father." He was trying to communicate with them. But all they saw was the snake hissing more and more and more. And if the snake hisses in front of you, you got to get rid of it quick. So they started beating harder, the snake, until Kailash the snake died. Because that's the bad news. The good news is that he died in thinking of Narada Muni. And in his next life, he became a great devotee and performed nice service. And then in that life, he went back home, back to Godhead. But this is an example of what can happen to anyone who's attached to this world. Fruitive workers are generally very, very attached. That's a big problem for them because they will have to come back over and over again until they sort this attachment out. But in Krishna consciousness, we also have some kinds of some different attachments. Sometimes we're attached to our designation. I remember as a young brahmachari, because in those days we were trained in such a way that you should not look in the face and eyes of a woman. It was a very strict principle. And it was spread around by sannyasis. There's no way you should look at a woman in her eyes. Of course, when a sannyasi once said that to Prabhupada, "I'm never going to look at a woman ever again." And Prabhupada, he laughed and said, "Where is there such an injunction in the Vedas?" So he passed that one off immediately. But anyway, that was the preaching. And one mind, body, and spirit festival, right in the early days, I was asked to manage one book stand. It was at this Earl's Court, is it? They still have it there? Yeah. So we had a stand, and we had a book stand. I was asked to man a book stand and distribute some books. So one very beautiful girl came up and started asking me questions, and specifically about the Bhagavad Gita. So I answered her questions, but I was looking all around, everywhere but looking at her and her face and eyes. Well, you know, this Bhagavad Gita is actually, 120,000 million years old, and you know, Krishna doesn't waste any time. In the second chapter, he immediately explains something which is very important. And that is that we're not this body. You know, here's me completely on the bodily platform trying to preach to her that I'm not this body. And then after about 15 minutes of all this, she suddenly said to me, "You know, I don't believe a word you're saying." Well, that was another problem, because we were also told in those days, never let a woman defeat you. So then I thought, right, okay. So just in that, on that principle of not having this woman defeating me, I looked at her in her face and eyes, and I said more or less the same thing. And then she said, thank you very much. And how much is your Bhagavad Gita? So I sold her a Bhagavad Gita. But afterwards I was thinking, what was Krishna trying to tell me? And that was my conclusion, that I was falsely thinking that I'm a brahmachari and that, you know, I don't do this and I don't do that. And in one sense, what you're doing is you're out preaching to the public, but you're making designations. Oh, this person is good to preach to, and this person's not so good. I will not preach to women, I will only preach to men. In fact, sannyasis used to say that to the brahmacharis. Because if you preach to a woman becomes a devotee, she has to get married, and we lose one of our men. No? That's not a good idea. So this is an example of being completely attached to one's bodily designation, brahmachari, sannyas, grihas, whatever it is. Last night I was asked to give a Bhagavad Gita class, and I was also very attached to my situation, and I was quite annoyed. I found myself getting annoyed because everywhere around me there was some activity going on. There was activity going on behind the curtains, and there was talking, and there was activity going on over here, there was talking. There was activity going on outside, there was talking, and even from that door I could hear things. And at the same time people were walking in and out. And I was thinking, how can I possibly give a class? And I lost all my flow of concentration, and I was thinking, I'm going to give this one up. But then my good intelligence said, no. So there's only two persons listening to you. Prabhupada said, if you don't have anyone listening to you, then preach to the wall. At least you'll preach to yourself by preaching to the wall. You see, so I was able to see last night how, yes, you know, even after 40 years, I'm still attached. I'm attached to my surroundings. And that my surroundings must be perfect. If they're not perfect, or if they're not going the way I want them to be going, then I will desist from this service. So giving classes is very, well, it's a privilege actually to give a class, because it's not a platform where you, because you're a little bit higher than everyone else and you have a microphone in front of you, it's not an opportunity to then control those who are listening to you or control the environment around you, or being attached to the result of your class. How many laughs did I get today? Or did I say the right thing? Or did I say something that was inappropriate? We can get mental like that. But if something's inappropriate, we'll be told by others very quickly. So we have to just do our service and do to the best of our ability, and then let Krishna bring the result. And finally, management is another situation where we can either control or we can empower. Many managers, sometimes the... Sorry, you can leave, it's all right, if you want. Door is this way. Hare Krishna. He was attached to leave from the class. Anyway, I forgot my point now. What was I saying? Yes, you know, some leaders, they want to control the devotees around them. And the devotees feel that element of controlling, and they're uncomfortable. It goes on a lot in ISKCON. And devotees feel very uncomfortable about it, and they're always asking, you know, of all persons to be temple president, why is this person the temple president? And that was asked by Prabhupada at one point, why is this person temple president? He doesn't chant his rounds, he does this. And Prabhupada just very frankly said, well, if he didn't have this position as temple president, he probably wouldn't be able to do any other service anyway. So better that he's a temple president than doing anything. That is not to criticize our temple president here. He's doing a very wonderful job in empowering others. This is the secret of a manager, to empower. Prabhupada was very expert at that. Even the most insignificant sort of devotee who felt that he was incapable of doing anything, Prabhupada had the ability to empower that person so that they could do most wonderful activities. So in conclusion, yes, getting this balance right, it's a fine line. As Prabhupada would say, it's like a tight rope, walking a tight rope, or walking the razor's edge. One way or the other, you slip, then there's disaster. So, along with our daily services, whether we're Grihasthas, Sannyasis, Varnaprasthas, or Brahmacharis, let us always think the bigger picture. The immediate picture is I have this duty, I have this service. But the bigger picture is Krishna's watching. Your attitude in that service, your whether you have other agendas but other than to please him. If we have no other agendas, then he will personally take charge of our spiritual life and give us all that we need to execute that service in the best way possible. So the verse again, I'll just read it. Narada Muni replied, my dear king, those who stay at home as householders must act to earn their livelihood. And instead of trying to enjoy the results of their work themselves, they should offer this result to Krishna, Vasudeva. How to satisfy Vasudeva in this life can be perfectly understood through the association of great devotees of the Lord. So let's stay in the association of devotees, then all these complications in our spiritual life will be worked out. So I'll stop there. Srila Prabhupada ki, Sri Sri Gaura Nithai ki, Sri Radha Gokulananda ki.